Good morning. The oral hearing for Jill Stein for President will now come to order. I want to remind everyone that for today's regular open meeting, it'll begin about 15 minutes, after the conclusion of this hearing. This hearing will be conducted pursuant to 11 CFR section 9038.2C2. Jill Stein for President is the principal campaign committee of former presidential candidate, Dr. Jill Stein. The committee requested administrative review of the commission's determination that the committee must repay public matching funds in the amount of $175,272 to the United States Treasury. As part of its administrative review request, the committee requested this oral hearing, which was granted by the commission on January 22nd of 2021. Before us today, we have Mr. Harry Kresge, counsel for the committee, along with former presidential candidate, Dr. Jill Stein, and campaign volunteers, Ms. Nassim Nouri and Mr. John Edwards. And I want to say welcome to all of you. Representing the commission, we have from our Office of General Counsel, Mr. Joshua Bloom, Ms. Jennifer Waldman, Mr. Lorenzo Holloway, and Mr. Nevin Stefanovic. The commission's consideration of the repayment issue in this matter has an extensive history, so I'll first provide a little background. The Green Party nominated Dr. Stein as its presidential candidate on August the 6th, 2016. During its national nominating convention. Shortly after the convention, the commission concluded that Dr. Stein's date of ineligibility was August the 6th, the date of the nomination. The date of ineligibility, DOI for short, is a term mentioned numerous times in the commission's regulations and refers to the ending date of the matching payment period. The committee challenged the commission's DOI determination on two separate occasions, and each time the commission affirmed that the DOI was August the 6th of 2016. The question of whether Dr. Stein's DOI should be later than August 6th is significant because the determination of the DOI controls the magnitude of the commitment's the committee's repayment obligation. On April 16th, 2019, the commission completed its audit of the committee's activities during the 2015-2016 presidential election cycle and issued its final audit report. The audit report concluded that the committee had to repay $175,272 to the United States Treasury because the committee had surplus campaign funds as of the DOI and had received excess public funds after that date. Once the commission issues a final audit report, a publicly financed candidate such as Dr. Stein may seek administrative review of the commission's repayment determination, and the committee has exercised that option here on her behalf. The sole purpose of today's hearing is to give the committee an opportunity to address to the commission and to demonstrate that no repayment or a lesser repayment is required. In past oral hearings regarding repayment determinations, we have given the committee's representative up to 30 minutes for an opening presentation. I suspect the council might not need that much time this morning, but we do want to make sure that the committee is treated the same as others who have come before us to challenge repayment determinations. Council, your presentation should be limited to those matters raised in the committee's written response to the commission's repayment determination that you filed on June 17, 2019. The administrative review process set forth at 11 CFR section 9038.2C2 allows for challenges to repayment determinations. Accordingly, this hearing is not a proper forum to address other challenges. At the conclusion of the committee's presentation, each commissioner will have the opportunity to ask questions. I would then ask the general counsel and the audit division if they have any questions. At the end of today's hearing, you'll have the opportunity to make a closing statement. After this hearing, the committee will have 5 days in which to submit additional materials for commission consideration. Pursuant to 11 CFR section 9038.2C3, the commission will then make a repayment determination following an administrative review and issue a statement of reasons in support of that determination. And council, if you'd like, it's time for you to proceed with your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can everybody hear me? Good. I'm Harry Kresge. Good morning. I'm the attorney for the Jill Stein for President Committee 2016. The repayment that we're considering today is based on a date of ineligibility, a DOI, that's unsupported by law, logic, and precedent. It undermines the effort to achieve a fair balance between candidates of the major parties and independent and minor party presidential candidates. It ignores the fact that unlike major party candidates whose nomination guarantees them a ballot line in all 50 states, candidates like Dr. Stein have to undergo an extended effort to petition for a place on the ballot for weeks after receiving a minor party nomination. A system that does not take this into account is unjustifiable as a matter of law and public policy. A candidate seeking a major party nomination can receive matching funds throughout his or her effort to win their party's nomination. If the DOI of a minor party candidate is the date of their nominating convention, he or she is deprived of matching funds at the very point where the arduous and expensive effort to achieve ballot status, ballot access intensifies. In light of the realities of independent and minor party presidential campaigns, the only fair framework is one that assures that funds expended on ballot access are matchable regardless of convention dates of the various parties, major and minor. The final audit report states on page 11 that the candidate's DOI was August 6, 2016. That was the date of the Green Party convention. However, this is inconsistent with a series of advisory opinions issued by the commission dating back to 1975. In AOR 1975-53, the commission stated, with respect to individuals seeking a ballot position in a general election for federal office without nomination by a party, a primary election shall be deemed to have occurred on the day prescribed by applicable state law as the last day to qualify for a petition on the general election ballot, or the date of the last major party convention. I'm sorry, major party primary election, whichever is later. A source of confusion may have been AOR 1975-44, where the issue was how to apply limits to campaign donations. There, the commission, in an effort to have a uniform limit for various campaigns, stated, accordingly, for the purpose of applying the limitations in 18 USC section 608, the commissioner will view the petition process required of the presidential candidates of the minor parties as the equivalent of the primary elections and convention process of the major party candidates. Therefore, an individual may contribute $1,000 to a presidential candidate of a minor party for his or her petition effort and another $1,000 to the candidate for his or her general election effort. Since the dates pertaining to petition qualification vary from state to state, the commission considers it necessary to prescribe a uniform date when for purposes of 18 USC 608B, the petition process ends for minor party presidential candidates. The commission concludes that the prescribed date should be when the presidential nominee last selected before the general election is nominated by a national nominating convention of a major party. This seeming contradiction can be reconciled by recognizing that AOR 1975-44 applies to the question of how to uniformly apply contribution limitations. That is not the issue in the case at bar. Rather, it is when expenditures by the 2016 Stein campaign cease to be matchable. AOR 1975-53 governs in that case. The question turns on the particularities of the 2016 Stein campaign and those of other candidates. Unlike the issue of allowing expenditures for ballot access to be matched, the issue of when general election contributions can be allowed or allowed can be uniformly applied to all candidates without inherently prejudicing minor party and independent candidates. There is an argument to be made for uniformity in the application of contribution limits that in no way applies to the qualification of funds used for ballot access to be matched by the federal government. Dr. Stein's 2012 campaign was able to utilize as its DOI the last day to petition in states where the Green Party did not have ballot access. That date that year happened to coincide with the date of the last major party nominating convention. That was not the case in 2016. Pegging the DOI for a minor party candidate to the date of a major party convention introduces an unacceptable element of arbitrariness. If expenditures for ballot access are matchable, that should be the case regardless of when the candidate in question or any other candidate receives the party nomination. Indeed, the coincidence of the two dates in 2012 created a situation where Dr. Stein was penalized for the understandable expectation that her efforts would be treated similarly in 2016. Dr. Stein relied on this expectation. Indeed, she received matching funds for this ballot access activity in 2016. It's a form of entrapment to now apply a DOI of August 6th for the very same activity. Moreover, the 2016 Stein campaign was not even aware of the new DOI until after the campaign ended and after funds were expended for ballot access and matched. Pegging the DOI for a minor party candidate to the date of a major party convention makes planning and fundraising very difficult. Indeed, it will be impossible to identify the date of the DOI for the next presidential cycle in 2024 until other players decide on the date of their conventions. Such a decision will likely be made without regard to the needs of non-major party presidential candidates for that cycle. Even worse, it invites the major parties to pick an early date, which prejudices the interest of independent and minor party candidates. There was no basis to move the DOI to August 6th, the date of the Green Party convention. The first indication of this approach was AOR 1984-11, and I'm reading from it. The Matching Payment Act and commission regulations require that matching payments, as well as all disbursements of an eligible candidate's campaign committee, be used only for qualified campaign expenses. Qualified campaign expenses may only be incurred with respect to the period in which a candidate is eligible for matching payments. The date when the candidate becomes ineligible coincides with the last date of the matching payment period for that candidate. Accordingly, campaign expenditures made or campaign obligations incurred within the matching period would satisfy the timeliness requirement for a qualified campaign expense. In addition, such expenses must also be made in conjunction with the campaign's campaign for nomination. In Mr. Surrett's situation, the candidate at that time, expenditures will apparently be made to collect petition signatures for the general election ballot. The commission is of the opinion that these expenses, to the extent they are paid or incurred within what would be Mr. Surrett's matching period, if he becomes eligible for matching funds, would be qualified campaign expenses for the purposes of the Matching Payment Act. This AOR doesn't indicate that this is in fact a change from AO 1975-53. Nor is any reason for such a change articulated. In fact, the new standard is entirely circulated. It is entirely circular. Qualified campaign expenditures, we are told, are those made in the period when the campaign is eligible for matching funds. This contradicts the principle that efforts to get on the ballot is part of the primary effort, regardless of when it occurs. It compounds the very legal and constitutional problems this principle was designed to prevent. That is, the very different terrain an independent or a minor party candidate must navigate. Namely, ballot access efforts must continue after the convention and well into September of the election year. This concern was directly expressed in AOR 1975-44. There, the commission stated, however, in this case, as in the past, the commission is concerned to construe the provisions of the act in a manner consistent with constitutional requirements, regardless of a candidate's party affiliation or independent status. The primary election and convention process is a procedure through which major parties typically determine their candidates for the general election. The procedure for presidential candidates of minor parties, however, differs in that most states have a separate petition process whereby such candidates may qualify for the general election ballot. Accordingly, for the purpose of applying the limitations in 18 U.S.C. 608, the commission will review the petition process required of presidential candidates of the minor parties as the equivalent of the primary elections and convention process of major party candidates. This perspective was applied in AOR 1995-45, which makes no mention of the matching funds period. It states unequivocally, it has long been the view of the commission that for non-major party candidates, the process by which they satisfy the requirements of state law governing qualification for a position on the general election ballot serve purposes similar to a primary election or other nominating process. This view is supported by the commission regulations defining the term election, which state that for non-major party and independent candidates, the date prescribed for the date prescribed by applicable state law as the last day to qualify for a position on the general election ballot may be designated as the primary election for such candidate. The AOR cites 11 CFR 100.2C41. Based on this reasoning, the commission concluded in advisory opinions 1984-25 and 1984-11 that the ballot access expenses of candidates for minor party nominees would be qualified campaign expenses. Let me read the cited regulation, 11 CFR 100.2C4I. The cited regulation states, and I'm quoting here, with respect for individuals seeking federal office as independent candidates or without nomination as a major party, as defined in 26 USC 9002-6, the primary election is considered to occur on one of the following dates at the choice of the candidate. The day prescribed by applicable state law as the last day to qualify for a position on the general election ballot may be designated as the primary election for such candidate. Two, the date of the last major party primary election, caucus, or convention in that state may be designated as a primary election for such candidate. And three, in the case of non-major parties, the date of the nomination by that party may be designated as the primary election for such candidate. I reiterate, which of these applies is at the choice of the candidate. Obviously, the choice of the Green Party and Dr. Stein was the latest possible date, which is geared to the dates for the petitioning process to get on general election ballots in the many states where the Green Party did not have ballot status. The Stein campaign had every right to rely on this construct when it expended funds for ballot access and accepted matching fund payments for them. Let me just speak briefly about the procedural background here. There was no complaint. This matter was generated by an audit. The final audit report issued on April 17, 2019, alleged that as of the DOI, the campaign had a surplus of $200,856 in net outstanding campaign obligations, or NOCO. This required two repayments, one pursuant to a regulatory formula. A prorated repayment of $40,372 was due. In addition, the matching funds payment of $134,900 received on January 12, 2017 was required to be repaid. Thus, the audit called for a total repayment of $175,272. The campaign disputed these numbers, in particular, contending that disbursements for ballot access expenses after the August 6, 2016 DOI should have been included in the amount of $255,671. This amount would have been enough to eliminate the NOCO surplus and therefore eliminate the repayment. The significance of the date of the DOI is obvious. On March 17, 2019, The commission voted to approve the audit report, including the $175,000 repayment. The campaign's position is that if the DOI is extended, as it should be, to the last day of petitioning in states where the Green Party did not have ballot status, then the repayment goes away. In addition, the campaign has recently provided documentation demonstrating additional wind down costs, which we contend are continuing. To recap, the repayment determination should include campaign expenditures for ballot access after the commission's DOI of August 6, 2016. These expenditures amounted to another $255,671 in ballot access costs, exceeding the surplus of $200,856 claimed in the audit report. Technically speaking, surplus NOCO calculated in the audit report should have been corrected to a deficit of $55,430. The additional wind down cost referenced above would further increase the NOCO deficit. In the absence of a surplus NOCO, the prorated repayment of $40,372 claimed in the audit report is eliminated. The corrected deficit NOCO also eliminates the repayment of $134,900 in matching funds that was called for in the audit. These expenditures were for petitioning drives in states where the Green Party did not have ballot access. As such, they are matchable under a corrected DOI. Indeed, how could they not be, inasmuch as the entire construct for minor parties is based on the proposition that expenditures to get on the ballot are the equivalent of primary expenditures. To rule otherwise would constitute a form of entrapment. First, the matching funds were already paid. Second, in 2012, they were treated as matchable expenditures. The expenditures were made in the reasonable good faith belief that as they were necessary to achieve ballot status, they were valid and matchable. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Do any commissioners have any questions? Does the Office of General Counsel or the Audit Division have any questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Bloom.
Yes, thank you. I just have one question. Mr. Kresge alluded to the fact that the committee provided the commission with documents pertaining to winding down expenses in advance of the hearing. And so I would just like to ask how the documents relate to issues that were raised in the committee's written submission requesting administrative review of the repayment determination.
In my letter of June 17th, 2019, requesting the hearing, the last paragraph, states, as will be demonstrated in a further submission coming directly from the committee, were it not for the improper imposition of the August 6th DOI, no repayment would be required. And in addition to that,
this is Jill asking for recognition.
Sure.
Yes, Dr. Stein.
Yeah, I would just point out in the letter that Attorney Kresge is referencing, which was the formal request for this administrative hearing, he states in the 1, 2, 3, 4th paragraph that the committee will here and demonstrate that reimbursement of ballot access and related expenses, as well as the nature of winding down expenses, would specifically be addressed and would change the repayment order as well as the calculation of the net outstanding campaign obligations. The surplus would be impacted by winding down expenses as well as ballot access expenses that should be recognized. So that is specifically stated in that 4th paragraph.
Thank you, Dr. Stein.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? And Mr. Kresge or Dr. Stein, would you care to make a closing statement?
I can just briefly, I don't have very much to add. I think what's important is that Matching Funds program was designed to and is required to be conducted in a way that treats minor parties and independent candidates as favorably as the major parties are treated. And in fact, you could make the case, and I think the case is a sound one, that matching payments themselves, which many major party candidates don't even accept now, are specifically designed to give a leg up to minor party and independent candidates who don't have the financial clout of the major party candidates, particularly in a presidential situation. So to arbitrarily apply a DOI which denies matching funds for ballot access and winding down costs, and in particular ballot access, which aren't even a factor for a major party candidate because the major parties already have ballot status in every state, really undermines the purpose of the matching funds program, in my opinion, and in particular, the commission's concern for an obligation to see to it that all candidates, major and minor and independent, are treated equally and not prejudiced by the matching funds program and the commission's activities and conduct. Thank you.
And may I have recognition?
Yes, Dr. Stein.
Thank you. I want to thank Attorney Kresge for that very substantive review of the critical advisory opinions and the critical regulations and statutes. And it's there's a lot of detail here. And as a layperson, not a lawyer, but you know, anybody watching this as a public hearing or viewing it afterwards as a public hearing, let me just say that I think the real key issues here, as Attorney Kresge just summarized, are really whether the independents and minor parties have equal access to the ballot as determined by our access to public funding. And the public funding program, it seems, has to meet that need for those candidates and political groups that don't have access to deep pockets and the various forms of finance that really dominate, as this commission knows so well, that have come to dominate our electoral process. And if, you know, you've probably seen recent polls, one from Gallup just done last week, that showed the public hunger for a variety of political opinions now is at an all-time high. And it really, I think it's the mission, or one of the missions of this commission, you know, is to ensure that there is a public forum in our elections and that there are a variety of political viewpoints represented, which there is so much hunger for right now. And I think it's a tribute to the commission that its very foundational advisory opinions stressed this point and made it possible for small parties and independents to have access to the ballot through a broad definition of this question of eligibility. And it was, you know, the process was defined early on in such a way that small parties and small players and independents could have access to that public funding in order to achieve ballot status. And with that opportunity having been provided to us in 2012, we had certainly expected that it would be consistent in 2016. And we were really quite shocked to learn after the fact that that was not going to be the case. And I would just urge you to look carefully at Attorney Kresge's submission, which details, I think, beautifully how it is that the legal structures were established in order to meet our highest small d democratic aspirations, that our elections should be truly competitive, open, publicly funded to the extent possible, and that there would be a real opportunity for the American people to have an inclusive conversation and a diverse set of choices as a part of that process. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. This hearing is adjourned.